And for Farah Siddiqui, the interim evening news director is Hannah Francis. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/evening news. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Terrence Burns. All our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our fall fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $45,000 by September 20th. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you could go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for an interview with Susie and Pedro, Portlanders advocating for immigration rights.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Hannah Francis. I am joined by Susie and Pedro, who created the petition to revoke the permit, which allows ICE to operate in the Southwest McAdams facility. This permit was issued in 2011. So thank you for being here, Susie. Pedro's going to join us in a little bit. First off, it's been a little while since we've spoken. A lot of things have changed. Some things have stayed the same. You know, the protests are still happening. ICE is still disappearing people. The city council has still not revoked their permit to operate in the city. But your petition has gained, last time I checked, over 17,000 signatures. What's the current status?
Well, when I think about the current status, I'm just going to where my heart goes and my conscience, which is that the current status of the situation is that multiple protesters have been targeted and even beaten up, especially quite a few Indigenous femmes and femmes in general. Women have been targeted brutally on the front lines, and that unfortunately, it isn't only Indigenous femmes or femmes, because all protesters who are down there have tasted the gas and experienced different variations on brutality. And I think at this point, since I've been through this before and seen the conversation change to the way that the protesters are being treated and people's First Amendment rights are being violated, I want to make sure that we don't lose sight of the reasons why people are putting their lives and their bodies on the line. And so, yeah, that goes back to, for many of us, the reasons why people signed the petition, and the greater issue of removing Portland, the city of Portland, from complicity with ICE and growing racism and authoritarianism in the United States. In terms of the petition, there has been very little movement, and instead what I would call a chilling effect when there's violence against people using their First Amendment rights. I think people often forget that the right to petition is part of those rights. And we were very careful to create this petition because of the way that quote-unquote Antifa has been demonized by the Trump organization. And we felt, you know, at least in our household, that we had to be as careful as possible because of all that demonization. And so we carefully proceeded, although our, you know, our underpinnings are of anarchist political philosophy. We still utilized the legislative process and tried to approach city council in every way we could, completely as they would request. And yet they only responded, in my opinion, in my experience, with violence. And that violence creates a chilling effect on people, so that less and less people feel comfortable going out there. And it takes more and more courage for people to go out there. And they still are. There are at different times, growing numbers of protesters and growing numbers of people becoming aware at any given time, as well as people who are terrified or even downright hurt, brutalized, victimized by the federal government operating right here in our city, and a kind of a dearth of appropriate reporting on true human rights abuses taking place there that stem from violations of a city-issued permit. So the last bit of news I saw was a video. I saw this today, so I'm mentioning it, put out by Councillor Angelita Morillo. I ask for everyone's understanding that while I am, you know, part of the quote-unquote radical left in Portland, I'm not a member of the DSA. And at this point, I'm seeing Morillo and others really defend the detention center and even say that it's not a detention center, even though it's coded, enshrined by their own language in the permit as a detention center, using her platform to argue for the bureaucracy and against the power of the people. I think that has a chilling effect too. I think it's highly problematic. And I think it's even more problematic in the face of what I mentioned in the beginning. But if she's using her platform to consistently describe the political gridlock and kind of a no way out dynamic, that's not okay, because the city, again, the city issued that permit. The permit is being violated. We now know it's been violated more than 47 times. And there's something called the Nelson Mandela rules that are internationally adopted by the United Nations. And there's many, many ways that this situation violates those international rules, namely that prisons have to provide places, sleeping accommodations, you know, and accommodations for, you know, concerning people's health.
A little while ago, Jeremiah Hayden published a piece in Street Roots that was outlining some of what Oliveira had talked about as the process for actually revoking this permit, which they're saying is like not a permit, but it is another word for functionally the same thing. It's like, it's a pretty lengthy process, but the first step in that process, according to public records, has been taken, and PPD received two complaints on July 21st that was alleging these violations of the conditional use, like you're saying. And I'm curious if you've heard of any developments in this or any steps being taken forward.
Well, I'm going to break the news here. I am one of those complainants as well. And no one else knows that, but I think, you know, I appreciate your follow-up and your follow-through, so I'll break that news here. I am one of the complainants. I also believe that there are quite a few more complaints than that. I believe that that's a fact, because it revoked the permit. Created an action network asking people, you know, or asking people to consider following up on those complaints. So I'm pretty sure there are more than just those two. But again, what I'm describing is this political gridlock, bureaucratic gridlock that only helps authoritarianism. The other aspect that I didn't mention before is that we also know from being down there and from eyewitness reports from amazing community members who live down there, that the real use of that building right now is a training and organizational planning networking facility for DHS agents who are coming in droves to, I think, plan expanded activities. So, you know, the whole argument that this somehow it's needed for people to check in, well, that's baloney, because during COVID, people were able to have their check-ins online, and there are two other buildings where that can happen. And we are for an immigration system that has the dignity, allowing people not to have to enter a facility that contains a detention center or a detention facility in order to do those check-ins. That's not necessary. And so, yeah, that would be more dignified if we do have to have an immigration system, which likely we do. No. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. The online check-ins should be, do you know if it's been pushed?
I mean, to me, the only thing that I see being pushed is the doors of the center open by members of DSA and the city council. That's the only thing I see people using their platforms for. Maybe they'll whisper something about you know, people getting trained by PERC at the end of a long statement about why the center must remain open and why the political gridlock is happening. So there's a lot of explaining on behalf of the rise of authoritarianism. So that's my long answer, I guess.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And there's also a lot of concerns about, you know, if this facility is successfully closed or not, that ICE has the ability to set up another facility in any other federally owned or operated building, right?
I think that was a concern some people brought up, but I wonder how many people saw in the news about maybe it was 6-8 months ago, Donald Trump put many of the federal buildings in Portland up for sale. So I wonder what has been the outcome of that. If the federal government did or did not sell those buildings would be something that I would like to inquire about. And yes, they probably could do that, and no one is naively thinking they couldn't. The issue here is the complicity of city council. You know, in Portland, city council would not be complicit in that case. Would there still be protests? Yes, there would still be protests. But in this case, the city council definitely does have the power to take action. Just at their last meeting, the last city council meeting, I watched it, and they carefully used an emergency clause to make some changes regarding permitting and regarding land use. It wasn't exactly the same circumstance, but I watched as they used an emergency clause for another situation to make very quick movements. So that's another question I have, is why is it only permissible to use an emergency clause when it's financially beneficial to, you know, or beneficial in some other way, but not against authoritarianism and the rise of ICE in Portland? Seems strange. Pedro's here.
Hello.
Sweet. Hi, Pedro. Thanks for being here. Another thing that I'm definitely really concerned about is this new development on July 30th, where ICE is no longer allowing bond hearings for immigrants who are detained. And I kind of wonder how that affects this conversation, right? Because I think a lot of the concerns around the ICE facility being removed is that then people won't have access to lawyers, is like a lot of the concern there. But if they're not, if they don't have access to bond hearings across the board, what does that mean?
Well, it's just that it proves that, you know, while those who want to keep ICE intact are operating, in my view, on the defensive, ICE and the government keeps going forward. They just keep pushing the gas. And the government has said it from the very beginning. They're just going to continue pushing forward, and they're not going to stop. And so giving in to not doing anything is not the response. And one thing about that concerns me about that whole narrative of not doing anything because supposedly, you know, they are not going to be access to these other meetings that supposedly take place at the building. Well, all of the voices that are articulating that, such as PERC and ECHO, the which is related to the Lawyers Guild, these are in many ways organizations that are funded by the state of Oregon. And let's be clear, you know, the state of Oregon, the government, you know, Tina Kotek, the House of Representatives there, Senate from local to federal, they are not interested in interrupting ICE. They their mission is to keep it intact, even when they step out in front of a microphone and say, you know, something to the lines of critiquing what they're seeing and expressing concerns and so on. They are not interested in interrupting or ICE and keeping our, and therefore keeping our communities safer. They want ICE to remain intact. And so, and these organizations are being funded by the state. And so they will never be able to have an analysis that is an abolitionist analysis, because from the get-go, there is a non-official gag order, if you will, because they are not a, not even a whistleblower or watchdog organization. They are an organization that is there. I'm not minimizing the work, for instance, the work that PERC does in the communities. I think it's very important. They are trying to make sure that people who are engaged in the immigration process have due legal process, have support for these processes. But their role is not to really interrupt when their human rights are being violated, such as being detained in a facility.
Also, I guess I'd just add a further more to that, Pedro. It does become not only fictitious, but unethical to continue to make that argument in light of the human rights abuses that are happening inside and outside. See, so to erase the human rights abuses against, you know, protesters, as well as against those 47 or more people who have endured conditions that are unacceptable by international standards, to ignore those and to continue with the narrative that it should remain open while not mentioning the human rights abuses is totally unethical. And exactly. And that's totally, it is never something that's going to be acceptable to me. And I think more and more people are waking up to that hypocrisy. And again, I think this is a place for people to consider, you know, the value of anarchistic political philosophy and where they really are in terms of trusting the government or anyone who says they are your government. Well, what is your government really doing right now, including people who claim to be liberal or even radical, people who say that they're still abolitionists? Maybe they're actually not. And maybe anyone who is engaged in that right now, I think nationally, they're finding out that they are powerless to the rise of authoritarianism without the people who are not the government and who together we do actually have the power to continue to make this demand. People should come out and continue to protest. We can't call it a safe space, but the only way through this is for people to stop trusting those who make excuses, who are clearly denying human rights violations, who are speaking up for political gridlock rather than raising the flag of human rights violations are happening here. And that's the bottom line. That has to be the bottom line. And if that's not the bottom line for any of the politicians on city council, then it's more evidence that the political process in this country really does not serve the people, which is, which I think is what the petition now highlights.
Yeah, tapping into what Susie said, from the very beginning, the moment we learned that human rights were being violated at the detention center, then where are the ethics of those who are in charge of decision-making, and what are the ethics of continuing and trying to articulate that people are going to be safe by going into that building,
right?
As we may not know whether they're going to go in or go out. I think it's terrible in the sense that from shortly after that information came out to the surface, and as they drag their feet more and more and more, they're trying to avoid that concern, which is the main concern that we must take into consideration, is that human rights are being violated, and we cannot overlook those human rights violations, because they're showing us what they're doing, and they're showing us what they are going to continue to do unless they are interrupted. Mm-hmm. And so when they continue with this narrative of they're with the community, or they're doing this, or they're fighting like this, or fighting like that, what they're trying to, well, in actions, what they're trying to do is to convince the public that the detention center somehow is vital or important for people to have due process. I it's a very defeated, and actually it's dangerous in the sense that it deceives the public and deceives the people who are most affected, which, you know, which is the immigrant community, and those, and who are the people who the government says are trying to support in this situation.
Yeah, well said.
When Mayor Wilson walked away from that DEI funding, the response from council, which was no response at all, you know, speaks volumes.
I will say Loretta Smith did provide a comment, and that was very courageous of Ms. Smith. Just talking about erasure of Black and Indigenous mm-hmm. people on the front lines, and I don't want to see that happen to Loretta Smith because she was the only one in the news who did speak up, and we are paying attention, and we do support her in that statement that she made.
Yeah, besides Councillor Smith, everybody else was just silence, and so it speaks volume about where they're, if that's their stance on DEI, mm-hmm. you know where their stance is about ICE, because you know it is. Even when you put both on a balance, you know that ICE is far more, in many ways, tense and dangerous in terms of what it represents. And so they weren't willing to stand up about DEI. They're not going to stand up about ICE. And actually, in many ways, they just put them on the other side of the fence. They're in many ways, with their signs, they are supporting ICE.
Jamie Dunphy did reach back to us saying that, you know, he was willing to consider revocation. Kanal stated willingness to, and I don't want to speak for them, but I'm just sharing my experience, stated willingness to reconsider the permit. At that point, it seemed like there were more counselors willing to, this is a few weeks ago, to reconsider. But that seemed to get lost in a lack of communication that I think is characteristic of this new city government that's supposed to work better. As you can see, I'm beyond jaded to being, someone called me dug in. I'm completely dug into the idea that this political process does not work for the people, not only here in Oregon, but nationally. You could call me dug in on that. And to the person who called me dug in, I think they're dug into Nazism and authoritarianism. And I think that the only way out is a popular uprising. And I think that the people who are on the front lines right now are some of the most courageous and beautiful people, many of whom who have been brutalized numerous times and continue to come back out. I think that we can learn the most from those people and by supporting those people in different ways. People have different capacities to be out there, but there are different things you can do. And you can look at Portland Contra las Deportaciones, it's like PDX Contra on Instagram, Revoke the Permit. ICE out of Portland, posts a lot of things. And I just hope that people will get involved, because there really isn't a way out of this without the people coming out. Our legislators, unfortunately, are not going to get us out of this. And I mean that both for this micro issue here in Portland, which is a human rights issue, and the macro issue taking place nationally and really globally. I mean, we see the oppression of working class people and unemployed people and people who are struggling with in different ways worldwide. So the only way is that popular uprising.
Thank you. I wonder if there's something that is giving you hope, if there's some tactics that protesters are using in certain areas, or if there's certain methods that people in different countries are using that is giving you hope. If you could just share a little bit.
I'll tell you for sure. NECAP gives me a lot of hope. You know, I'm Irish American, so I really tune into what NECAP is doing and using their platform to advocate for Palestinian people and oppressed people worldwide. That's beautiful. But just as much or more, the frontline protesters at this ICE detention center right now give me tremendous hope. Like I said, I was out there in the, you know, in the last iteration of this, and I've been out there a little bit, but I'm 4 years from 50. I'm not saying that's an excuse, but it gives me a lot of hope that there are people down there and growing numbers of people. The Revolutionary Bicycle Club gives me a lot of hope. Mm-hmm. Pedro, what about you?
I agree. I shout out to everyone who have put themselves on the line out there at the detention center and have in many ways interrupted, even being there, even when it seems as if things continue to function, quote unquote. They are doing a great deal of interruption, and that makes it that whatever is happening doesn't go in secret, it doesn't go unnoticed, and every day, you know, federal agents, ICE, and all of that, that, you know, whenever they come out to do what they do, they expose more of that very repressive violence that the state's perpetrating. So my hopes is with the people every day, and that and I think that I think, unfortunately, fear, no shame on anybody who may feel that they are afraid or fear. I'm a human being. I have felt fear whenever I have gone out there to the streets and, you know, and put myself out there in dangerous situations. And so that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about when one allows fear to overcome to the extent that you wanna not do anything and then go even further and want to convince everybody else that the response and the right way to go is by not doing anything, and in the process make everyone believe or think that you are doing something. I think that's very dangerous. It brings in an environment of confusion and deception, and so that kind of defeated approach is just not going to take us anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Independent journalism gives me hope. Thinking of other things,
yes,
that give me hope.
Independent journalism.
Mike Crenshaw, who's been talking about the rise of authoritarianism for so long, gives me hope. And again, Revoke the Permit, that group, the research being done by that group is amazing. They give me a lot of hope. That's not my group. People sort of think that's my group sometimes because of the petition, but not. It's an independent group. And they're an amazing group of people.
Which has taken over on its own
since
the petition started.
Right.
So that's
good for them.
KBOOS, loud and proud. Become a member during our KBOOS Out Loud Fall Membership Drive, taking place now through September 20th. Your contribution goes towards grassroots, independent, radically made, community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give and help us reach our $45,000 goal. Thank you.